Hello and welcome to the Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Jamp and Luke Gottfried.
Hello.
And this time, special guest, Noah Finns.
Hooray!
This week, we're talking about false positives and phantom fetuses. But first, ooh, the YouTube comment of the week. This one comes from Lilith Delane, and it says, I love this show, and it's sad to me that it consistently shows me how bad the US is.
Oh, that is a takeaway.
So a question for everyone listening and watching. If you're listening, head over to the YouTube and get this answer in the comments. The question for you is, what would you name your kids? What would you guys name your kids?
Gertrude.
That's it. No more answers. Let's move on. So what are we talking about this week? Does anyone know what we're talking about?
Phantom fetuses and false positives.
What does that mean?
I have phantom breastuses. Oh,
is it when it looks like you're pregnant, but you're not?
Kind of, yeah. We're talking about hysterical pregnancies. That's the only time.
What do you mean hysterical? That's sexist and outdated.
You're the one that specifically said to me, Noah, you said to me, can we do an episode on hysterical pregnancies?
I did this 2 years ago. I said that 2 years ago.
It takes a while. There's a bit of a turnaround time. You should have joined the Patreon.
why would I do that?
Pregnancy is an incredible thing. The way that the human body can change so quickly in order to create, grow, and birth another human. What is possibly more incredible is when the body just decides to be pregnant without being pregnant. So hysterical pregnancies or false pregnancies, phantom pregnancies, pseudo pregnancies, or pseudocyesis are cases wherein someone presents with a physiological symptom of pregnancy, but without a fetus being there.
Mary.
No, the opposite of Mary.
Mary just gave birth one day, didn't she?
Mary definitely had a baby. She just didn't do the stuff before.
We don't know that. I don't believe her. She defo had sex. Like, Jesus is real, but she defo had sex.
I'm sure she did. Good for her.
At some point, sure.
Not relevant to the topic.
After Jesus was born, maybe.
So, like I said, Noah suggested this episode topic like 2 years ago. Why?
I just thought it was cool, and then I realized I forgot what I had actually meant by hysterical pregnancies those years ago. And then when we were talking about it a few days ago, I was like, oh yeah, hysterical pregnancies. You know the one where you get pregnant and you don't know? It's the opposite of that, isn't it?
It's the opposite.
It's not.
Well, you know you're pregnant, but you're not.
Exactly, yeah.
So why is it...
You don't get pregnant, but you do know.
Isn't hysterical to do with wombs?
Yeah.
Yes.
So aren't all pregnancies hysterical?
No, hysteria is in like, oh, she's crazy.
Oh, she's making it up.
That's why they called it hysteria, because it came from the womb, apparently.
Well, whenever a woman does something crazy, you call it hysterical.
No, I know this. I just mean that most pregnancies happen in the womb.
Yes.
So they are hysterical pregnancies.
Yes, one could say that. Well, that is very true.
But there are pregnancies that happen not in the womb, like in the fallopian tubes.
Ectopic pregnancy.
Yeah. No, so hysterical pregnancy. We're not going to call it hysterical pregnancy moving forward because it just feels like a dirty name. Ooh. Don't like it. Also, I don't know where you got hysterical pregnancy from because I was looking it up. Almost nowhere calls it hysterical pregnancy.
Oh, this is a Noah thing.
Yeah.
I have so many ideas. I don't know where they come from. I don't know. I can't answer the question.
Like Googling hysterical pregnancy is difficult. So we're going to call it pseudocyesis from now on, I think. Obviously from the Greek pseudos, false, and chiesis, meaning pregnancy.
Like Caesar.
Sounds like a Pokemon.
Pseudocyesis.
That's pseudo-widow.
A pseudo-widow, yeah. Which is fake wood. Pseudo.
Oh, yeah. Fake
widow,
pregnancy.
The Greek for...
you know what? I never thought about that.
Pseudo-widow.
like I said, pseudocyesis is when someone presents with the signs and symptoms of pregnancy but with no obvious fetus. It's very rare. It's like 550 to 600 cases have been reported in English medical literature since the 18th century, which is the 1700s, obviously.
No obvious fetus. So it could be like a covert fetus.
Snaky fetus.
I say no obvious fetus because you could just be, like, there is the chance that you could be missing a fetus. I'm just trying to be like...
No. How can you be missing a fetus? What does that mean?
Like very early pregnancy, you could have a very tiny fetus that then doesn't carry
the
term.
Oh, that doesn't show up.
You just can't see it. Because it's 1700. You might not spot it, and then it just falls out when it's...
Falls.
Well, like it doesn't develop, and then you sort of pass it. Is that what happens?
I mean, realistically, so pseudocyesis is a pregnant, like the physiological symptoms of pregnancy, but without the fetus. But you say no obvious fetus because... It can be difficult to rule out that there definitely is no fetus.
Yeah.
Because they can be tricky and difficult to spot sometimes.
They can
look
hide.
Harder.
Yeah. So, you know, but like, yes, technically speaking, pseudocyesis is when there is no fetus, but you got all the pregnancy stuff going on. And like I said, it's super rare. That's only around 2 cases a year if you average it out. It's been decreasing, actually. in sort of recent years. We'll get to why.
Is that because we've been better at finding fetuses?
No, actually. Well, we'll get to why later. Like, there's a whole section later on about why it's been decreasing. It's actually really interesting. But how long do you reckon that this usually lasts, pseudocyesis?
9 months.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, a few weeks to 9 months.
So the body just knows.
It's just like, thinks it's pregnant, yeah.
Should be gone by now.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of different reasons.
The brain's so crazy.
You say that. It's actually a really weird sort of disorder. Like, I was looking into it, and it wasn't what I first expected it to be. It's most common in women 20 to 39 years old, but it's also been described in people as young as 6 years old, and also postmenopausal women up to 79 years old.
I mean, would not want to be pregnant at any of those ages.
6 or 79. I feel like you just... What age would you want to be pregnant?
I would not.
If you could choose.
Somewhere in between those.
If you had to pick.
Maybe before or after death.
That's not an age.
Before?
Yeah.
Reversing causality here.
Wait, before death?
Yeah, what is the medical condition?
I meant before life.
Before or after death.
What's the medical condition in which Noah's corpse suddenly presents with symptoms of pregnancy?
The pregnancy bone will appear.
That's a condition wherein somebody... needs to be checking that the morgue doors are locked more appropriately.
Oh God. So it'd be pseudo post-mortem cyesis.
So back to the actual episode topic. We're talking about pseudocyesis, obviously. And it's obviously been seen in women as old as 79 years old and as young as 6 years old. And it's not just in women. It can also be in trans men or non-binary people too. We'll get into that when it comes to like the actual causes.
Question.
Yes.
Can somebody... who is born male present with pseudocyesis?
I think so. I've actually seen things saying that it is kind of technically possible, but No. There is another related disorder that is not exactly pseudocyesis. It's got a very similar naming convention. It can also be called phantom pregnancy and stuff, or like sympathetic pregnancy, things like that, wherein people who are, you know, like male think that they're pregnant.
Just because they think they're pregnant, because of physical symptoms.
Yeah, I think I think pseudocyesis, I don't want to go out on a limb and say absolutely males cannot present with pseudocyesis, but I, as far as I'm aware, I think that's something slightly different.
I mean, there are some trans women that like feel like they're on their periods.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they get hormonal, I guess. Wow. But that's a hormone
fluctuation more than anything. It's just a hormone cycle. Yeah. Whereas this is like... We'll get into it because it is really interesting. So it's more common in poorer areas of the world with lower access to healthcare, basically places where people can't be seen regularly by their doctors. So why don't we go through the signs and symptoms? First one is abdominal distension. Do you know
that
what
that means? That when it sticks out?
Yeah, sticking out.
What?
Yeah.
I thought the belly only got bigger because the baby was in there.
No, so this isn't... bear in mind, this isn't like, oh, I think I'm pregnant. This is physiologically... You can look pregnant.
Yeah,
this is
why people. Sure.
Yeah. So yeah, no.
But the belly is swelling, and there's nothing pushing it outwards.
Well, there can be. We'll get to the causes of why that is, but it's kind of multifaceted, really.
Big dinner.
hungry boy.
I just ate so much. No. So yeah, obviously, usually in pregnancy, the sort of abdomen gets distended because there is a baby growing in there. But in this case, there are other reasons. It's not ever just like, I don't think there's just one specific reason for it. There's a multitude of reasons that could cause.
Would that not suggest that in pregnancy there are also other causes?
No.
Well,
potentially there is the movement organs. I mean, the main reason that your abdomen is going to be bigger is because there's a baby in there.
Yeah.
But we'll get to it. Realistically, the cause of this distension is. It could be related to a number of different things.
Sure.
And that are not like pregnancy related themselves.
The only thing I'm trying to clarify and understand is when you are actually pregnant, does the body sort of start to swell the abdomen?
I don't think so. I feel like you're looking at this as though the body is actually
preparing to be pregnant,
as opposed to it is presenting with symptoms that appear similar to pregnancy. So there's many reasons that your abdomen can be distended, right?
Right.
But in this case, eating lactose when lactose intolerance.
Cheese makes my abdomen distend.
So in this case, Noah would eat cheese and then get a swollen abdomen and then think, I am pregnant.
Perfectly logical.
I would not listen.
Hypothetically.
You are saying things untrue.
Wow.
Correct yourself on this. So,
hypothetically, in this made up situation, yes. Noah would have a distended stomach and a distended abdomen and think, oh, I'm pregnant. But obviously, the distended abdomen is entirely unrelated to pregnancy in this case.
Right.
Right.
I just got the vibe that this fake pregnancy, not ectopic, what's it called again?
Pseudo-pregnancy.
Was like the body thinking it was pregnant.
Preparing for pregnancy.
So, what you need to understand is that, this will be more clear when we go through the symptoms. It's interesting because all of these sort of signs of pregnancy, they are not necessarily specific to pregnancy.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, if you have, we use this all the time, the sort of... when we talk about sort of disease and like sort of symptom, when we talk about gay people, and we talk about like, you know, there are many causes, there can be many causes for being gay.
I always find this analogy makes so uncomfortable.
I love this analogy.
Somebody is not going to have seen the time we talked about it.
So my point is that like there are many causes for being gay, and we look at being gay as oftentimes we look at being gay as just a thing with one cause leading to it, like kind of like a disease. We do look at being gay as though it's a disease sometimes.
We don't.
True.
No, we don't. Not us personally. We as a society. My point here is that there are many
Speak
things.
For yourself.
There are many things that could lead to these symptoms presenting, and it's not necessarily pregnancy. And in fact, in this case, it quite clearly is not pregnancy. Although sometimes it can be something weird. We'll get to that in a sec. So, abdominal distension. Yeah.
Yep.
Belly getting big. Enlargement of the breasts. Oh. Titties getting big. Then there's cessation, interruption, or disorder of menses. Periods getting all wonky. Morning sickness and vomiting. And then there's the typical lordotic posture on walking, which is the excessive inward curvature of the spine.
But is that not a symptom of your stomach being bigger?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's not just something that happens to pregnant women. They just walk funny.
No. So the pregnant women do it because they're pregnant.
Because
these people think they're pregnant. And there could be a sort of, psychosomatic aspect to it as well, wherein because you think you're pregnant, that because of one symptom, you then think you're pregnant, which then causes some other symptoms.
Right.
That's not always the case. There are a few different causes for this. There's also inverted umbilicus, which is your navel or belly button. But that can...
Pop out,
yeah.
If it's not already
That's
popped out.
That's not inverted, though, is it?
It is inverted.
Oh, it's inverted from the inside.
It's inverted from its state of pre-inversion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, increased appetite and weight gain. And so of those symptoms, usually the changes in your periods and the changes in your breast size are the most common, which makes sense because...
Hormones.
It's a thing that can just happen normally without pregnancy.
Well, your boobies get bigger when you're in your period anyway. They just get heavy and painful.
So it's actually in the DSM-5, which I find really interesting. So you guys know what the DSM-5 is?
Oh, it's for mental like illnesses.
But this is a physical. Yeah. This is a physical thing happening.
But is it?
Well, if your tummy gets big, then yes.
But cannot other mental disorders result in physical symptoms?
Like what?
I'm sure you're going to tell me they can.
Like your body changing.
Oh, like anorexia, for example.
Sure.
Yeah. But that's as a result
anxiety.
Of like not eating
that's
as much.
Because you don't eat.
It's not because your brain just makes your body skinny.
Yeah, no, but there are other like depression, anxiety. Like,
but that's all because of behavior. They create behavioral changes.
Sure. Yeah. But we'll
so
there's a
you
there
think
is a...
you're pregnant and then you eat lots of cheese like Noah and
yes.
then you get an extended abdomen. And then you go, oh no, I'm pregnant. And then you get your period and your boobs swell and you think you're even more pregnant.
You don't get your period.
And that's in the DSM-5.
Sure. Well, kind of, yeah.
People get periods.
No, so it's the DSM-5, obviously, for anyone that doesn't know, is a big book of definitions and diagnostic criteria for mental health issues and neurodivergencies and psychiatric disorders. Basically, it's just an explanation of what's going on inside Noah's noggin.
I have many things.
Yeah, depression, bipolar disorder, other mood disorders, anxiety, personality disorders, PTSD.
Oh my God, wait, I have so many of these.
Yeah, buddy.
Gotta catch them all.
Noah saw the DSM-5 and said, yes.
Yes, I will be reading one of these, please.
Completionism.
It's a to-do list. So the DSM-5 definition of pseudocyesis is a false belief of being pregnant that is associated with objective signs and reported symptoms of pregnancy, which may include abdominal enlargement, reduced menstrual flow, amenorrhea, which is the sort of cessation of your... Periods. Subjective sensation of fetal movement, which is you feel like the baby's kicking. Nausea, breast enlargement, and secretions. Your titties start leaking milk.
I find it very interesting, though, this categorization is that this is like, you know, there being a thing in the DSM-5 that, you know, you start coughing up blood all over the place, and then you think something's wrong with you because you're coughing up blood.
Yeah, that would be normal.
It would be like, that's a normal reaction to coughing up blood. Whereas if you're like, oh, you spent all your life being like, your tummy gets big, your boobs are bigger and they're swelling, and you feel like something's kicking. That bit's phantom. Yeah.
Right. But you've
come to the wrong conclusion.
Yeah, but it's so much more than that, right? So there are those physical symptoms, but my next section is, why is it in the DSM-5? And I think because it seemed kind of psychosomatic, but reading more into it, it makes way more sense. So it's kind of has a section of its own. It's under somatic symptom disorders in the not elsewhere classified section. So somatic symptom disorders, somatic meaning body.
Yeah.
Symptom disorder. So basically symptom disorder, disorders wherein the symptoms affect your body.
So that's where the word somatotypes come from.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's that somatic is body in psychosomatic, right? And so just to read a quote from Psych Database on what these sort of not elsewhere classified sections of the somatic symptom disorders actually are. It says, other specified somatic symptom disorders is a category of the DSM-5 diagnoses that applies to individuals who have symptoms characteristic of somatic symptom and related disorders. So somatic symptom disorder, illness anxiety disorder, but do not meet the full criteria for any of them. Other specified diagnoses are not limited to these disorders and are used throughout the DSM-5 to capture presentations where individuals have significant clinical impairment but do not meet standard criteria. Basically, they've made a category for when your brain affects your body.
Yeah.
And when if it doesn't fit into any of the sort of boxes that they've got already, they chuck you into not elsewhere classified.
Throw you straight in there.
Yeah. So it's because, well, there's somatic symptom disorder, which is like its own sort of thing. There's also, like, as I mentioned, illness anxiety disorder. It's kind of like they basically present first in non-psychiatric settings, and then they kind of get brought into psychiatry because the most notable thing usually is the physical symptoms that come with them. Mm. So, like, this is kind of related to, do you know factitious disorder?
Nope.
No. You probably know it better by Munchausen syndrome.
Yep.
Of course.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Right? So, does anyone want to describe what that is?
Oh, Munchausen's is a... So, Munchausen's by proxy is when you... Okay, so Munchausen's is like... where you convince yourself that you're like very, very ill.
And oh yes,
like with thingy Rose.
Yeah. So that Gypsy you put Rose. Yourself Gypsy in a, so that you put yourself in a position of care.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Kind of.
Well, it's more like the disorder where you feel like you're just ill.
Yeah. Well, people often know about Munchausen by proxy, which is wherein someone is convinced that someone else is ill, and they sort of almost keep them ill through the treatments.
Yeah.
And Munchausen syndrome is, there's kind of wonky definitions here. So it's not quite factitious disorder exactly. There is like, it's splitting hairs when you separate them. But Munchausen syndrome is essentially wherein you fully believe that you have these illnesses. And there's no obvious gain for you to fake having these illnesses. So it's not like you can get financial gain or anything like that, wherein one would say that seems sort of, that makes sense. Do you know what I mean? Like, as in,
you should do an episode on this.
Yeah, we will. We will do an episode on it. Let us know in the comments if you want to do an episode on it. But it's one of those things where it doesn't. You wouldn't think any normal person would be like, "Yes, I'm going to fake having this illness for personal gain."
Yeah,
it's a case wherein people just clearly don't have the illness, but are convinced that they do.
Yeah.
And consistently seek care for like different illnesses.
Yeah. So they actually do. They fully believe that they're ill, because I'd only ever read about it in the context of people who like admitting themselves to hospital and as a way of bringing about being in the position of being cared for, like they want to be cared for.
Yeah, that's kind of. Yeah.
And then by proxy would be wanting to be the carer, or potentially could be wanting to be the carer.
I didn't look too deeply into it. I think that did come up in what I was reading. It's odd and very interesting, and it really deserves its whole a whole episode of its own. So what these somatic symptom disorders are psychological disorders wherein there are symptoms affecting your body. I mean, literally in the name, I can't describe it more concisely than that, really. Yeah,
it's in your brain and it makes your body
do stuff. Yeah, where the symptoms are predominantly like physical or related to the body in that sense.
So is this is probably maybe is a spoiler, maybe I'm getting ahead, but is this being caused by the brain then? And then that causes the body to respond? Because I had figured it was the body responding in a certain way.
I think
and
it's
the
a
brain.
Feedback loop. And it's obviously it's a rare thing and they can present differently. Like mostly when you're reading, when you're researching this, you're looking at case studies. I try to avoid looking at case studies usually unless I want an interesting particular story, because obviously a case study is one data point.
Yeah.
But most of this has to be case studies because, as I said, there's an average of about two of these cases reported like a year, which isn't very many. And it's been declining. So essentially, like it can be it can kind of be a bit of both in that sense. Do you know what I mean? Like not just the body responding and then the brain responding to that. Like they can feed into each other in like, kind of interesting ways.
It's so weird because I would have thought that like maybe this would happen to people that would want to be pregnant but couldn't get pregnant, or just people who were like dreaming of getting pregnant. But I mean, like 6-year-olds don't want to be pregnant. So like it just happens.
So it can happen. Interestingly, it can happen with people that really, really want to get pregnant but aren't able to. So if someone had a miscarriage, it can happen to them. Essentially, it's if you are sort of preoccupied with thoughts of pregnancy, it can affect. That's when it can affect you. So whether you are terrified of getting pregnant. So in the case of I think I've read cases where trans men have had this, and they're like, I don't want to be pregnant. Oh no, because they've got this anxiety about being pregnant. And then these symptoms, they are like when these pregnancy like symptoms present themselves, they essentially like get fixated on that and think that they're pregnant. And that can cause other.
So it can be like a bunch of different causes.
Exactly. Yeah. But then there could also be people who are really, really wanting to have a kid.
Yeah.
Like I said, that you could miscarry and then like have a phantom pregnancy, go through pseudocyesis because you really, really want a kid. So it's not, it doesn't need to be like strong positive or strong negative. It's just like a strong sort of preoccupation with pregnancy can put you at a greater risk of this.
It's not just having a strong preoccupation that it can happen to anyone, right?
I mean, I think in most cases, it seems to present when someone is preoccupied with pregnancy to some extent. So this is from the Endocrinology and Physiology of Pseudocyesis, a 2013 paper. It says, the physical symptoms may or may not be associated with a diagnosed medical condition, but the person is experiencing symptoms and believes they are sick. That is, not faking the illness.
Yeah.
And that's in reference to sort of somatic symptom disorders, and in the same case as this. Like, this isn't someone faking pregnancy. This is someone fully believing that they are pregnant.
Because you'd be weird to not.
Exactly. and essentially, these disorders usually are first spotted, like, outside the context of mental health care, and then they're brought into mental health care, and obviously they're spotted outside of mental health care because of the physical symptoms affecting the body. And those symptoms can then get in the way of normal life or be in some way stressful. That's why it would then fall into the DSM, because it's not just I'm ill. It's it's this sort of odd case wherein you believe you're ill or you believe that there's something going on when there isn't. And these small physical symptoms, which would otherwise be kind of, you'd be able to kind of generally overlook, like interrupted periods or enlarged breast, you could maybe overlook, become like they in sort of take over your life because you think you're pregnant, and it can be very distressing or, you know, that sort of thing. Especially when you think that you're pregnant, but there's no obvious fetus. That can be a very stressful situation to be in, right?
Yeah. I know it's probably an answer that you don't have, but like thinking of that 6-year-old, like a 6-year-old doesn't have boobs. Like, did they have precocious puberty, or like, did they just have the big belly,
I have no idea.
Because I swear, like, because you could have any number of those symptoms, right? It doesn't have to be like specific. Yeah. It could be any of them. So it's just really interesting to think, like, did that 6-year-old grow boobies?
I have no idea.
That 6-year-old get like, it's weird.
Yeah, I think the 6-year-old must have been convinced.
You could probably at least partially answer that question by looking at that case. I think it's in China where there was like a 9-year-old parents.
Yeah.
And see whether they. Developed in any way from an actual pregnancy.
Well, they would have had precocious puberty if they were able to get. Well, actually, you can get. Can you get pregnant before puberty?
No.
No, then an 8-year-old would have. Can't start puberty that
but
young.
But girls can start puberty quite.
But couldn't you technically, like, if you are female, you do have eggs. If one of those happens to get out.
Yeah, but like, does that
pregnant.
Happen before
I don't know.
Puberty? I don't think it
but
would happen
in
before.
Enough people. I think maybe too many weird things happen.
I think there's too many different things that need to happen for pregnancy to follow through.
Right,
and having a body that is not set up, because you got to remember, going through puberty is also, it's your sex organs basically kicking into gear as well. Yeah. And before that, they're just not really prepped. Like, you, like, basically, like, oh God, I don't want to talk about, like, little boy jizz, but there's no, like, sperm in there that's working, right? Like, I don't think, it basically,
could have put that in a better way, Gary.
My point is that, like, the testicles of, like, a child are not going to be set up to be prepared to produce so much sperm in order to, like, you know, impregnate someone. Obviously, like, if you start going through puberty, then
I had a friend that started puberty at the age of 9. Like, periods at the age of 9. Wow.
The 9-year-old cannot deal with periods.
No. And when you're 9, no one tells you what it is, because they're like, oh, you're too young. Like,
I think you are right about that. Case that I think is in China was also potentially precocious.
Yeah.
I'm not sure though.
Yeah, I mean, so in terms of that kid, I literally just saw, I think, in a couple of places saying, well, it can range, there have been cases as young as this and as old as this.
Yeah.
I don't actually know about the case itself. Back to the sort of, like, I guess, somatic symptom disorders. There are related disorders that I was talking about. So I mentioned factitious disorder already, but illness anxiety disorder, it used to be called hypochondriasis. Basically, do you know hypochondria?
Yeah.
So basically, someone is it takes up all their thoughts that they're constantly
get very fixated on, like, minor symptoms, thinking they've got, like, terrible diseases when they haven't. They've just got
they're minor constantly symptoms. Worrying about their health, thinking that they're ill when they're not, they're very worried about either getting ill or that they are
already ill.
And so, like, obviously this can result in people, like, checking themselves for signs of illness and, like, taking extreme measures to avoid potentially getting ill.
That's really funny that you just brought that up, because my mum used to call me a hypochondriac all the time, and I didn't know what the real definition was. I thought it was that you were pretending to be ill. Because I used to say I was ill because I didn't want to go to school. I was having a good time at school. So she'd be like, you're a hypochondriac. As if I was, like, genuinely thinking.
Yeah,
I was like,
no,
I'm pretending to be ill. Let's be clear here. I'm pretending. I don't want to go to school.
And then there's also conversion disorder, which is also called functional neurological symptom disorder. That's a condition wherein the symptoms affect a person's perception, sensation, or movement with no evidence of physical cause. This is wild. So you can have numbness, blindness, trouble walking. We've spoken about this before. Someone, like, people that think they're blind, and they are acting as though they're blind, even though there's no obvious reason for them to have vision disturbance.
So it says there's no evidence of a physical cause. Could it be the case that, like, somebody goes through a lot of trauma? Because there are cases of people going through, like, severe trauma and then suddenly losing the ability to walk.
Just
because of that's how, like, the trauma manifests in their body.
Yeah, I don't know necessarily if that's actually conversion disorder or not.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? This is kind of the group that this this disorder is in. So pseudocyesis is kind of grouped in kind of with this lot of thinking that you're blind and so that you are blind sort of thing, or being constantly worried about being ill when you're not, or factitious disorder, which I've said already is like an umbrella category, which basically is people intentionally acting physically or mentally ill without obvious benefits. So whether they believe it or not, like, which is what you mentioned earlier, whether they believe it or not themselves, I don't know if that is a necessary, like, sort of thing, but I think that they can believe it themselves, and it can still be called factitious disorder.
They might have convinced themselves that they are as well.
Sure, yeah, I don't know. We can do a whole episode on it, but yeah, so that's kind of the group that pseudocyesis falls under. So we've spoken about why it's called hysterical pregnancy already, I guess, right? Where it basically just comes from hysteria. Women be crazy.
Women had it so hard. I mean, still now, but, like, imagine having a hysterical pregnancy back when people would call anything a woman did hysteria. Like, you'd be so stressed out. You'd be like, there's literally.
Yeah, but what time period do you mean? Because there's two options here. Either you get sent to a crazy lady house.
Yeah, they had lots of them.
Or you get killed for having demons.
Nice.
Nice. Yeah. Or, like, exercised or whatever.
Exercise, not too bad. It's beneficial.
Yeah, so I wanted to kind of bring this up because the whole hysterical pregnancy thing, it's interesting to me how deeply rooted the term hysteria is in everyday language, and we don't really think about it, me being a feminist here, but I think it is really interesting that we don't think about where hysteria comes from and the actual history of that word. And
history.
Very good. But we just use it like flippantly. I mean, obviously we all know, we've spoken about this on the podcast before, that the term actually literally comes from the Greek word for uterus. Yeah. And it was because I think the Egyptians maybe the Greek, I can't remember exactly who, thought that it was literally the uterus wandering around the body and causing disturbances elsewhere.
I mean, the Greeks, like I said before, the Greeks thought that your testicles dropped in order to pull on your vocal cords to make your voice deeper.
Which doesn't make sense, because if they pulled, they would get tighter and their voice would go up.
That's true.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Doesn't even make any sense. You ever tuned a violin?
Debunked.
Idiots.
But yeah, so I think it is very interesting that we just call things hysterical when in reference to generally women or, you know, females. It's weird, and we probably shouldn't be doing it, which is why I didn't want to, which is why, despite the fact that this is called hysterical pregnancy, because that's what Noah called it, blame him, we're not actually going to call it that throughout the episode.
Shame.
So what causes hysterical pregnancy, do you think? Like I said, there haven't been large-scale studies on this because there aren't very many cases, so all of this information that I'm drawing from is generally from reviews of case studies. So like looking at a lot of case studies together, it's really difficult to get a large-scale study on this. In fact, it's more or less impossible.
Well, hormonal fluctuations or odd hormonal things could cause it.
That's a potential cause.
Or like preoccupation with pregnancy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, the question is, I guess, is it a symptom or a disease? Does it have multiple causes, or is there a single cause?
Oh, multiple causes, absolutely.
Okay,
yeah,
so
absolutely.
It's a symptom.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a symptom with its own symptoms.
Yeah,
well, like it's a tree.
It's like it's a disorder. It's not like one thing leads to it. You know, it's a number of things. I mean, when we talk about disorders and disease and all this sort of stuff, generally what we're doing, I mean, with diseases, it can be more straightforward if it's just like, you know, a viral infection or a bacterial infection. But with a lot of things, we generally just look at a bunch of symptoms and we're like, we're going to call that thing. We're going to give it a name.
Yeah.
So we can just...
It's a new enough thing.
Exactly.
It's different enough.
Has anyone looked into this with animals? Because it's just really interesting how some animals on their periods will like start nesting and that kind of thing. Like animals can just do that.
Oh, do you know what I was going to say?
They're not pregnant.
I was going to say that I feel like animals aren't like smart enough to be able to do that, but thinking about it, that behavior could change. That would be interesting. I've not seen anything about animals, to be honest.
I was going to say animals are dumb.
We are animal.
So while I said that there aren't any large-scale studies, I did find this review from 2017, which is obviously linked in the description. It is, I think, a biopsychosocial review to pseudocyesis, a narrative review. It was in the International Journal of Reproductive Biomedicine, written by, I think, Azizi et al.
Sorry.
Et al means and.
I know that's what it means. I was like, oh, I did psychology. This et al guy comes up a lot. I knew what it meant. I know that's what it means, but like that thought just...
Man, et al is very prolific.
Prolific
in very every smart. Field.
Or is it just a guy called Al, and they're writing in French?
And Al.
And Al. He prints it.
Like Madonna. With his first name only.
So, I mean, actually, if you were going to cite Madonna Madonna was going to be an author on a paper, that'd be interesting how that would work, wouldn't it?
I think Madonna's probably been cited in at least one scientific paper somewhere.
Oh, definitely. Probably, yeah. No, cited, but I mean Madonna as an author.
As an author.
Yeah. Yeah. I think more celebrities should just, like, do you know how they do, what's it called? The sort of fake degree, an honorary degree.
Fake degree, yeah.
They're
sure.
Fake degrees, whatever.
Yeah, sure.
When they give out honorary degrees, I feel like more celebrities should actually just have an honorary authorship on some papers.
But you have
some
to, papers. Or you
they
get
just show up
degree,
in the lab for a day.
You have to do one piece of research.
Oh my God, that'd be awesome. Yeah. I saw someone that I think got an honorary PhD from somewhere the other day, and they were like, oh, I'm a doctor now. And I'm like, what do you do? Like, what did you do anything to get the honorary degree? Because I feel like if it's honorary, you can't say that you're a doctor because you didn't do anything.
Well, yeah, but I think you give an honorary degree. Obviously, there'll be an awful lot of like dodgy dealings.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But like the idea behind it is that you have proven yourself to a doctorate level in your work. And so they give you a doctorate, I think, anyway.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think, but also they just do it to celebrities, like, as well.
Rich people and their friends and their relatives getting them too.
That's my goal. I think that's the easiest way for me to get a PhD rather than, you know, like doing it.
Yeah.
That'd be tough. So I'll just get famous, which seems to be easier, I suppose.
What a sad world we live in. Easier to get famous than it is to get a degree.
So as I was saying, this review is from 2017, and they found that in most cases, in pseudocyesis, it was a woman between the ages of 20 to 44. Not the same woman, obviously. Different women.
No, that's a bloody case.
How big can her boobies get?
They keep on looking at it, and it's like, why is it always Sandra? Why is she always presented? No.
She's all 500
silly
cases.
Sad.
So in most cases, it was a woman between 20 and 44, and the women were married in 80% of cases. And it was rare to see it in men or postmenopausal women, or before or during adolescence. So if you're a teenager, or you've hit menopause, or you're a bloke, you're less likely to... Can you stop reading my notes?
Sorry, it was rare to see in men.
Yes.
As in, it's happened to men.
Yeah, it has
happened. We've not talked about that, have we?
I literally mentioned it happening to trans guys multiple times.
Oh, I thought you meant males.
Okay, well, who's transphobic here?
How transphobic
of you? It's not transphobic.
Cancel that guy.
So this is one of those things where I looked into it, and it's hard to tell. I think it could happen to cis men technically by the... if they present with pregnancy, then it's obviously going to be like pseudocyesis, because there is not going to be a fetus in a cis man without a womb, all of that stuff, right? Unless there's some kind of intervention going on there.
Well, as long as
I think technically, by the definition of the disorder, one could be a cis man and present with pseudocyesis. But that may fall under something slightly different. I just think it'd be difficult, because basically cis men tend not to have the equipment for the whole pregnancy.
And they probably wouldn't worry that they're pregnant as well. They probably wouldn't be preoccupied. Oh, maybe I'm pregnant.
They could.
Really?
I genuinely think...
If it was me, I'd be like, oh, people are intersex. I might have a womb.
Yeah.
That's true.
Are there specific documented cases of this happening to trans men?
I didn't see any. It's really bloody annoying because it's case studies. And so it's really difficult for me to research this and have the same breadth of knowledge that I usually do. Because if I wanted to know about a lot of different cases, I'd need to read individual case studies, which is just a pain. So I think it can happen to trans men. I think it has been documented. I don't have any examples on hand because I am too lazy to do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Well, I mean, unless you want me to spend a month looking at all the case studies, in which case,
I do.
Okay. Let's leave now. I'll be back in a month. So as I was saying, if you're an old lady or a man or, a teenager and younger than that, unlikely that it's going to happen to you. And to be honest, bear in mind, it is unlikely to happen anyway.
To anyone.
The average, if we take every case that's been recorded from the 1700s, it averages out to about 2 cases a year. And it has been on the decline. So it is, if you're hearing this, you're like, oh God, what if it's not. You're not going to present with pseudocyesis. Like, I can almost guarantee that. In fact, the chances of someone in our audience actually presenting with it, it's so astronomically low, it'd be incredible if they did.
Could be you.
Because it's people who are often people who are preoccupied with the idea that they might be pregnant. Maybe if you were worried you might have this, you actually get pregnant.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
I'm worried I might get pseudocyesis. Oh, I've got it. Actually, no. You're pregnant.
Oh, my God. Imagine that, where someone... Oh, well, I'm sure there are cases where people are fully pregnant and just convince themselves that they're not. My mum, before she had me, went into labor and was sitting at her aunt's house, fully refusing to go to the hospital because she was saying that she wasn't in labor. But she was also jumping from the pains of the contractions.
But she had accepted that she was pregnant.
Well, she knew she was pregnant. She was just like,
she wasn't in labor.
Yeah, she was like, I'm not having the baby right now.
So she went to
her aunt's house and had a cup of tea, and got told, you're leaving before you have a baby on my sofa.
This is inconvenient for my schedule. I can't have the baby now.
Right?
So exactly. Rude.
She was, I mean, to be fair, she was 21. So like, if I was 21 and having a baby, I'd also be like, maybe, let's hold, can we hold this in the...
Oh, I've got a Side Guys episode.
So... In a lot of cases, it seems to be common in people with mental health problems, like prior mental health issues, or more physical problems with their brain health. So, like some kind of brain damage or whatnot, or developmental disorders due to like a physical issue within the brain. And here is a quote from that review. It says, in the absence of an exact etiology, studies have shown that different factors, including neuroendocrine disorders, physiological disorders, and sociocultural factors, and psychological or psychiatric factors or conditions are involved in the development of pseudocyesis. It's basically saying what I just said. So yeah. Because we don't have an exact etiology, which basically means we don't know how it happens. That's right. What etiology is. Okay, it's
cause.
Knowing, yeah, well, kind of knowing the causes that lead to this thing. And the studies have shown that there are different factors that can influence it, including you sort of brain hormonal factors brain and hormone factors, like psychiatric disorders, so like being mentally ill, or social cultural factors, as in, this is really interesting, it can be very common where in places wherein like sort of marriage and pregnancy are very, very important. So that can have an effect on it. So there are,
as in where it's important to only get pregnant when you're married.
Yeah. Well, it's not just that.
It's important to have kids.
Right.
Yeah. Like you get married to get pregnant to have kids. Like right. that is the what your purpose. Job is. Yeah. So basically that's saying that these are, because we don't know exactly what causes it, we have actually seen that there are these factors that can influence it. Yeah.
Yes.
And so, I mean, I've got a whole list of different factors here that we can just kind of go through and talk about because it is really interesting. So there's biological factors, which we'll kind of skip over, but like there's treatment with like sort of like antipsychotics that can, that can be a factor because antipsychotics can affect your body in a certain way. Like it can interrupt your periods potentially or like interrupt your hormone cycle to an extent.
It makes you gain weight as well, antipsychotics.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They can make you gain weight and you think you're pregnant because you've gained that weight. You've got interrupted periods. So do you know what I mean? Like you see some like sort of symptoms. You're like, well, obviously I'm pregnant.
Yeah.
And you get so deep into it that it just sort of like,
start finding more.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And especially someone that is already predisposed towards sort of like, honestly, psychosis, it's understandable that someone can get convinced that they are pregnant when they're not.
It's so fascinating that the part of your, like the conscious part of your brain that thinks, oh, I'm pregnant, I am worried that I might be pregnant.
Yeah.
Can then, it's almost like, I don't know if this is literally how it works, but it's almost like that belief like works its way into the subconscious part of the brain that then deals with things, for example, that might make your breasts grow or might make your stomach grow or that kind of stuff, which is totally not in your conscious control unless maybe you're like a Buddhist monk and have meditated for 5,000 years. It's just so interesting
it gets passed
between the conscious and the unconscious.
No, it is really interesting though, because I thought it was mostly that, just sort of the brain causing physical symptoms when I started looking into it before I really knew much about it. But there's so much more involved as well. Mm. Like that is really cool. And then you dig deeper and you find out all of this other stuff and it makes so much more sense. So I've already mentioned antipsychotics potentially being a sort of risk factor, but like hormonal changes as well can also affect this. And obviously that makes sense. If there are hormonal disruptions, then you could have a couple of these symptoms of pregnancy and then latch onto that. It's all, like there's, I'm not going to get into the specifics of it because there are, like, this review is fantastic, linked in the description obviously, but it's fantastic. It goes into specifically the kind of hormones and also the neurotransmitters that seem to be linked to this disorder, and it's very, very interesting. But also, you know, so sort of if we look at the sort of psychological factors and psychiatric disorders that are risk factors. So it says here, and I quote, ambivalence towards the existence of pregnancy, to desire to have a child, fear of pregnancy, history of infertility, major psychological distress, hostile aggressive attitudes regarding pregnancy and motherhood. And then there's also like grief following basically like a hysterectomy or like any other sort of like getting your tubes tied or whatever.
I'm getting so hysterical pregnant right now.
Really, are you?
I'm getting so hysterical pregnant.
I'm feeling
pregnant.
But imagine like if you were to get a hysterectomy as a guy and then like be like, oh, I just lost this part of me, and then also think that you're then pregnant from that. Like, it'd be very, very distressing.
Yeah. That would be like me getting my tits cut off and being like, oh, my tits are grown.
And then they grow back.
Right?
That'd be so annoying.
No!
I think it's happened to a few people who had like a bit of leftover breast tissue and got pregnant.
This is all insurance for that.
Yeah, but it wasn't like full boob growth. It's just there was like a bit of growth of tissue. Aww.
So not only that, you've also got psychological losses, like the loss of like a loved one, as in, As in, no, not like that kind of loss of a loved one, as in a breakup or something.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Fine.
It literally says a loss of love or loss of the object of one's love, loss of reproductive capacity, also psychiatric disorders, major depressive disorder, postpartum depression, bipolar disorder, you know, the usual anxiety. Yeah. You know, the ones we always talk about. All of those can have an influence. And then, like, schizophrenia as well. But the most interesting thing I thought was were the social factors, which I will literally just read out verbatim because it's the easiest way. Low educational attainment or lack of literacy, marital issues such as marital dissatisfaction, steady relationship or instability of relationship patterns, previous and current history of partner abuse, chronic social deprivation and or social isolation, family problems or poor family support, family and relative pressures to become pregnant, lower socioeconomic status and unemployment, and rigid cultural and religious ideas. It's so interesting because as soon as you read these, you can then like figure out why it seems to be going down in recent years, right?
Because a lot of those things are dropping on average.
Yes.
It's also very interesting that social isolation
can make you
have a hysterical pregnancy.
Because you want a friend.
What if I'm the Virgin Mary?
Please. I mean, going into this, it sounds like this crazy thing. Like, how could someone convince themselves that they're pregnant? And then you actually read into it and you're like, this makes so much sense. Yeah.
You're absolutely right. You could totally get somebody in like a Catholic community that has a risk factor for depression or some kind of mental health condition, has never had sex, but has a preoccupation with the purpose of marriage being to get pregnant. And then they have this type of false pregnancy and they think they're the Virgin Mary. You could absolutely have that.
Yeah. Do you think that's what...
No, because she had a baby.
She had a baby, I know. Yeah. Nah, there's something going on with that.
Maybe
that
they just found a baby in a manger.
Yeah, that one, right, was it? Right? I don't believe that one.
Like, she had to find one to steal. And then she just found one, you know?
Maybe she was like, take me to Bethlehem because she knew there was like a children's hospital or something. She was just going to nick one.
Nicked one! But she was pregnant though, wasn't she? Was she pregnant for a while, Mary?
Yeah.
You did Bible.
9 months.
You read Bible.
Buddy.
I did
Bible. How pregnant was she? For how long? 9 months?
Yeah. I don't know if that's written down, but I assume the normal amount of time.
Right?
I mean, I feel like if she was pregnant for... that, it's one of those things that is notable if you're not pregnant for 9 months.
I feel like she would be shunned.
Jesus went ahead and that's why she said it was the child of God. Jesus went ahead and died and then came back 3 days later. That's something that like you'd mention because it's notable. Like,
and you know what the best thing is? The word for a virgin is a mistranslation.
Amazing.
It means young woman.
Amazing.
Oh, yeah.
It is a mistranslation.
I thought I'd heard that before. Mwah! There's so many mistranslations like that in the Bible.
You can go to anybody and they will swear they believe in the virgin birth and it is not in the source material.
That's so interesting. So I follow this guy on TikTok who actually, he is wonderful. I'll see if I can link him in the description as well. But he basically debunks misinformation about the Bible and other religious texts. And he studies it. He studied it like his whole life, evidently. And he knows so much. And he's just very upfront. It seems that he believes in it, but he's also very upfront about the shortcomings of it. Like, well, these weren't written by eyewitnesses. This was written many years after this thing happened. This has been translated and retranslated multiple times. And actually, if you look at the original word, it doesn't mean what it now means. Like, oh, it's so...
just loads of that.
I find it so interesting. It's great. Yeah. So back to the social factors. It's actually really interesting, I think, obviously, that you can see why there's been this downward trend because of these risk factors. And it kind of throws it throws this whole sort of disorder into a greater light, right? Like, you can understand it much more deeply when you think, okay, these are the risk factors. These are the things that seem to be causing these people to believe that they're pregnant with these like, sort of with just a few symptoms of pregnancy and like no obvious fetus. And I've literally got written down here, interestingly, based on what I've read, it doesn't necessarily seem to be just the body spontaneously simulating pregnancy, which is what I assumed it would be at first. I thought it would be, this person has just got hormonal imbalances that make them seem pregnant.
Yeah.
But it's so much more than that. So I've actually got another quote here. So this is what I've written, and then I'll read the quote. So it says, notably, a lack or deficiency of dopamine has been spotted in people with pseudocyesis. So I was telling you earlier about how the neurotransmitters had been sort of like isolated. Oh. A lack of dopamine seems to be a risk factor. So like depression and ADHD, which isn't exactly a lack of dopamine, but it's, yes. You okay? You're pointing at yourself.
No, I was pointing at
yourself. You know this is also an audio format as well.
Dopamine, ADHD, that is me.
Yeah. It's much more multifaceted than I first thought. So the quote here says, studies reveal that a catecholamine and dopamine deficiency are responsible for hyperprolactinemia. Elevated prolactin levels leads to galactorrhea or lactation, the presence of corpus luteum, and the suppression of follicle-stimulating hormone and LH secretion, ultimately resulting in amenorrhea. So essentially what this is saying is that these sort of neurotransmitters, sort of like, I think, is that hormone as well? Basically, these sort of substances in your body, having a decreased amount of these can have a knock-on effect, which can then cause like lactation, and because it's all connected to your endocrine system, your hormones, and it just this one thing being a little bit off can have this knock-on effect, causing like lactation and interruptions in your period, which usually happens most commonly with pregnancy, especially if someone already is like preoccupied with pregnancy and or is like really focused on it in some way, whether it's like positive or negative. It's just so cool that like there are so many systems in your body that just like knocking one thing out of alignment can cause so much else
to
happen.
So stressful.
Yeah, but it's
anything
really cool.
Can happen. No, literally, if my hormone levels are low, there are so many like symptoms or whatever that I get. My entire body just feels different if I don't take my tea for
back
a few days.
When you were on was it progesterone or something?
The depot progesterone. Yeah, progesterone. The depot provera shot was progesterone.
So there was. It was really interesting because it was like you had it like what, like once every 3 months or once a month or something. Like
once every 3 months.
Once every 3 months. But monthly, there was also because of the way it was interacting with your testosterone shots, there was like a dip for like a week every month, where you would be the most sensitive person in the world, and like you couldn't talk about like this sensitivity week because he was too sensitive to talk about it.
Well,
and if you bring it up,
you say to someone who's grumpy, "You're a little grumpy." They're gonna get grumpier.
No, but like if someone gets upset so at like true. The way right. that you the way that you like I don't know picked up a fork and you try to explain, can we just chill this out because like you're feeling you're feeling sensitive right now. And then it's just like you've got to come back to the conversation a week later to talk about picking up the fork the wrong way.
I don't think I'd get more grumpy if someone told me I was grumpy.
Yeah, but you don't
really?
React
I feel
to,
like you don't react to things in the same normally. Way that a lot of people would.
Like, why?
For you, it's almost like opposite day all the time.
What I mean is that by saying to somebody you're grumpy, you're sort of taking off you're not blaming them, you're just saying, this is the state you're in right now, and let's talk about it. I'm either letting you know you're in that state, and I want to let be known that I'm in that state. Because then it's like, your reactions aren't... I know that it's an acknowledgement that the other person knows your reactions are not you being a dick. You're in a certain state.
But that's not usually the way that the statement is like phrased. It's like, oh, you're grumpy.
And it can be gaslighty as well. If you're like saying, oh, are you being grumpy? And actually, no, they're being perfectly reasonable and you're the one being a dick.
You're just being a bit grumpy today, aren't
you? But I mean, like, they'd have to do it consistently for that to be gaslighting.
Yeah.
Although it is a classic gaslighting tactic. You know.
Yeah.
As I mentioned, antipsychotics have also been shown to increase lactation and affect menstruation. And physical biological factors could also be things like hydatiform moles. Does anyone know what those are?
No,
absolutely not.
Kind of moles that you get when they grow, when they're not so supposed
as opposed
to
all those moles that don't grow.
That just
is it. Kind of like cancerous moles where they appear.
It's more specific than that. So a hydatidiform. Hydatidiform mole. It's kind of like a failed pregnancy. So the part that would usually become the placenta ends up growing instead. And usually when that happens, there's no viable embryo. So it's just a part of the placenta, or the part that would be the placenta growing instead of like the embryo or whatever. And then they can be quite big, and then are usually expelled after 20 weeks of pregnancy. So that could cause pseudocyesis, wherein you literally have physical symptoms of pregnancy, but there's no fetus because your body is like it's pregnant with like a mole, essentially.
It's focused on the wrong thing.
Not like an animal mole. Like
yes.
Not a
little vole.
Oh, look at this. A small mammal has popped out. I mean, that's not what happens in pregnancy anyway.
Funny looking baby.
So
who's the dad?
Could also be ovarian or central nervous system tumors, ectopic pregnancies, urinary retention causing the belief that one is pregnant.
Not by not peeing?
Well, no, it's not by not peeing. It's just...
retention?
I think it's not being able to fully empty your bladder.
Okay.
I got checked. I had to get checked for that. When I got checked for like whether I was able to empty my bladder properly, well, one, they told me to drink a lot of water beforehand, and I forgot, and then slammed like, I don't know, like 3 liters before I went, like an hour before.
Well, poor kidneys.
Well, the issue was that like, and that was fine. They said to drink like at least like half a, like at least like a pint. you know, or half a liter.
That's well off three liters.
So I slammed three because I got a big bladder.
Sorry, you didn't slam 3 pints. You slammed 3 liters.
I slammed 3 liters, yeah.
Yeah.
6 pints. It's fine. So
yeah, I slammed six fine. Times more than they told me to drink.
No. That was like the bare minimum.
Yeah.
And I'd left it almost too late. But the issue was I drank so much water so soon after it. So like you had to get an ultrasound with a full bladder and then empty your bladder, then do an ultrasound of that. But I emptied my bladder and then I went back and they were like, your bladder isn't fully empty. Are you sure that you've... And I'm like, is it possible that my bladder is just filling because I drank a lot of water?
Got a backlog.
And I had to pee again. They made me go pee again. And then I peed when I got home as well. Like I was just... peeing so much. So when you check you for urinary retention, they basically do an ultrasound before and after you pee. Really cool.
Right.
Yeah. It was fun.
Good times. I think 3 liters was a bit over the top.
I drink a lot of water. I can guzzle it, you know.
You don't need to drink that much.
Well, there's genuinely nothing, there's almost no better feeling in the world than getting like a big glass or bottle of cold water and just guzzling it down, letting it run down your face. You know?
Oh, I know, just not three of them.
I was worried and stressed and anxious. It made sense to drink 3 liters of water, and so I did.
I will say, peeing a lot in a day is a good feeling. We have to pee like 20 times in a day.
No, that's a
20 times. That's a disorder.
You should see a doctor.
That's an over-exaggeration. No, but when I drink a lot of water and you have to pee a lot, it feels good. It's like I'm definitely hydrated.
Yeah. I agree.
Not 20. I didn't literally mean
20 times a day. You know when you have to pee every 45 minutes,
but like pee enough to the point where you stop counting.
No.
What do you mean you stop counting?
Where are you stopping counting? Because you said 20.
No, why are you counting in the first place?
Five or six?
Do you guys count your pees in the day?
Oh, no.
Third pee of the day.
Yeah.
If you were to ask me how many times I've peed today, I wouldn't be able to tell you. I have no idea. Maybe twice.
More than 20.
Oh, yeah, I lose count after.
Oh, like, yeah, I've peed twice today.
Sure, if you think about it.
But if I pee a few more times, I'm not going to count anymore because it's boring.
Can't count past two.
Wait, you stop because it's boring to count how many times you've peed.
Yeah, it's just holding that information in my brain.
That's the reason
you stop. Oh, God.
Can't do it anymore.
Jesus.
Some of the tangents we go on this podcast.
So,
do you not just give like a tiny mental log of how many times you've peed and pooed?
Stop yourself.
No.
No.
Maybe, I guess, comment below, I need to speak to a doctor.
No.
So, stomach distension. I spoke about it earlier. We were talking about how does the abdomen distend, and I kind of buried the lead on this one a little bit. I didn't want to talk about it then. I wanted to talk about all this stuff so we understand it more. And we don't exactly know. There are a bunch of different causes that have been proposed to explain it. Because it is crazy that, you know, someone that is not pregnant can have like a swollen abdomen, essentially. So like there are a mixture of causes, apparently. Diaphragmatic. Basically, I think your diaphragm could be involved in basically sort of pushing the muscle sort of tenses and pushes things out. And apparently, this muscle, it pushes when it contracts, it pushes the bowel downwards in the abdominal cavity, and it can make it can give you that posture that is so like sort of common with pregnancy, and like that on top of having more fat in your abdomen, and it can make it like look like that. But also, interestingly, constipation is a symptom of this, because people can be constipated when they're pregnant, because, you know, having a baby and their gut gunks up all your organs. But this can also cause constipation because of the way that it's moving the sort of bowels around. And Jesus. So do you see what I mean? This is what's really cool about it. When we try and look into why the abdomen can be distended, we find this reason that like, there's a muscle pushing that is causing other symptoms that seem like pregnancy.
Yeah.
So it's so interesting, like how your body can just like do so many different things that look like pregnancy but just aren't pregnancy. Yeah. It's like when you see like a bug that is so like evolved to look like a leaf, but it's actually a bug. It's like it's got nothing to do with a leaf at all. It just looks a lot like a leaf. It's like the same fucking thing. It's so cool. So that's kind of one idea for why basically the sort of like the diaphragmatic muscle just sort of pushing on the bowels. And as I've said, I want to say this again, it's mostly based on case studies, so it's hard to like sort of hammer in solid reasoning for this. But put it this way, you could, for example, say you're depressed, and depression can lead to weight gain, and antidepressants can also cause disruptions for your period, and already that's two symptoms of pregnancy. right? So if you're already primed, then you might start to think you're pregnant, which could then cause other apparent symptoms of pregnancy through that. It's just wild. So like the whole thing about the social factors is the fact that like being in rural or underdeveloped areas can put you at higher risk for it, especially when you don't see a doctor often. And the only time you generally see a doctor is when you're going into labor. That's in places like that, right? So you can be, it can be more common to have pseudocyesis if you're in a place where you don't have much contact with your doctor.
Can you have can you have a fake going into labor when you have this?
Yes.
What?
So they can have they can think that they're going into labor during the it's crazy, during the due date, but also it can just disappear. Like it can just go. So after like the sort of 9 months when you sort of get over it, a lot of the symptoms can just go. So like I literally think I've read wherein the abdominal sort of distension can just immediately go away.
Deflate. Why does it last 9 months?
Because you think that it's going to last 9 months. No, it doesn't. I said, it can last anywhere from a few weeks up to 9 months.
Yeah.
So it doesn't need to be, it's not 9 months every time.
Yeah.
It's just, it can last up to 9 months.
But the 9 month point, wait. People are like, oh, well,
imagine
it would have come.
Imagine it's gone on for 9 months and then you're like, okay, well, we know it's not a real pregnancy. Like, come on, you can disappear now. And imagine it just keeps going.
Yeah.
Imagine just having like this for like years.
I mean, it'd be horrible.
The rest of your life.
Right?
But some people love just being pregnant, right? Yeah. So
very
I think
few.
There are people who genuinely like being pregnant.
Oh, yeah. Like no, there are.
Yeah.
Mm.
This is going to sound a bit bleak, but are there phantom miscarriages? Like, are there reports of, like, them having a miscarriage? Like, symptoms of having a miscarriage?
Oh.
That'd be so interesting.
I've not seen that, no.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Just wondering.
So what do you mean by that?
I don't know, because I don't know what a miscarriage is like. I've never experienced one. But I assume it's, like, painful and there's bleeding and stuff. I wonder if that's ever happened.
Oh,
at the end, instead of like reaching the due date and it going away,
maybe. I mean, I guess it would feel like that, you know, subjectively. Anyway, like you're it's that kind of loss where you don't have the sort of like baby at the end of it.
Yeah.
So that is the whole sort of thing. Let's just look quickly at the sort of testing and treatment. So usually you get a physical exam, looking at the pelvis, like looking at sort of pelvis to see if there has been any conception, and then they look at the urine and all of that, and the urine. The analysis of the urine will usually come back negative, but it can come back positive if the person has a very rare cancer.
Mm. Oh, I thought you were going to say like the actual like pregnancy hormones could be present without.
Yeah. So those pregnancy hormones can be present in very rare types of cancer that release the same hormones as pregnancy.
No. I'm saying as in having this kind of hysterical pregnancy could make those hormones there, but, rather than being from a cancer.
Oh, okay. No. As far as I'm aware, no. It only says here with this very specific type of cancer. But then, see, again, this is what's really interesting to me about this whole thing where, like, humans are just this big, like, all life is just this big sort of mess of different systems. And where pregnancy is the most common answer for the majority of these symptoms.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's just something else. The only way to surefire 100% determine whether a pregnancy is true or false is to do an ultrasound. An ultrasound is the only test that can 100% disprove or prove a pregnancy.
Yeah.
All of this other stuff can be faulty in some way. Mm-hmm. And obviously ultrasounds can be faulty as well. But an ultrasound is the only way that you can 100% disprove or prove that that someone is pregnant or not in this case. And it's just so interesting to me that sort of like, there are so many, there's not any like sort of like treatment that is sort of laid out because it didn't happen very often, but there's no like specific treatment plan. It's basically just speaking to the sort of psychiatrist and psychologists and gynecologists and going to therapy, trying to focus on the causes for the sort of belief of pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And then also trying to treat just the physical symptoms themselves. Obviously, it could be, this is such a wide-ranging thing, right? We've said it could be anywhere from sort of cancers to specific moles to just having all these different risk factors. Like, there's not one specific cause of pseudocyesis, so actually finding a sort of surefire sort of panacea, I suppose, is not necessarily possible.
Does finding out that it's pseudocyesis sometimes fix the pseudocyesis?
Sometimes it can, but the issue is that if it's pseudocyesis, then being told you're not pregnant, it's not necessarily going to help, you know, because you can believe that you are pregnant still and be like, well, they're wrong.
Right. Yeah.
Right. It doesn't necessarily
but
fix
if you
it.
Believe them and you've been on this loop where part of it was that
you're overthinking about pregnancy, and then thinking you're pregnant, and that looping and looping. Mm-hmm. Does are there cases where being told that you're not pregnant and believing the medical professional telling you you're not pregnant interrupts that loop and it clears up?
I'm sure it can, but there's also the physical symptoms that are there. But like, it literally says here, I've got a quote that says, sometimes patients don't accept the diagnosis and refer to different physicians to accept their claims. A study showed that pseudocyesis resolved in most patients who were confronted with the reality that they were not pregnant. So
nice.
Again, this study said that in most cases, people that were told you're not pregnant, they'd be like, okay, cool. And then it's
cheers.
Fine. But
yeah, I suppose if it's something so important as like, especially if you were obsessive over trying to get pregnant, it can make you just like not trust anybody.
Yeah.
It's just you and your baby, and they're telling you your baby doesn't exist.
Exactly.
You've invested yourself in that baby.
Yeah.
And then you fight them.
Yeah, and I think it's really difficult for us to understand, like, for people who don't want to personally get pregnant, right? Because we're not going to be in that headspace. But like, it's obviously like a very like emotional sort of like a very emotional thing that's very like sort of deeply held.
I saw a Harvard lecture recently that was talking about I think it was oxytocin and testosterone, and it was talking about what those things do to the body. So testosterone traditionally is supposedly makes you more aggressive, and according to this Harvard lecture, it actually makes you more competitive in hierarchies. So some of our hierarchies reward aggression. So like in our society, aggression is sometimes rewarded. And then it talked about oxytocin, and oxytocin makes you, according to this lecture, makes you more likely to engage in in-group, out-group mentality. So you're more likely to sort of push people you consider outsiders away. And if it's you and your baby, that could be.
It could
be that it makes you more hostile to immigrants, for example.
Yeah.
But it could also be that it's you and your baby and your family, and you're more defensive of your in-group, and you're more attacking towards your out-group.
So
if this is your doctor telling you, and they're not part of your in-group, it's just you and your baby, then that could make you quite hostile towards this.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's true, yeah.
Yeah, it's very interesting, this whole thing. It was one of those episodes where when I start researching it, it's just a joy to find out more, because it's something I know nothing about at all. Not even like a cursory knowledge of it. Mm-hmm. And so every bit of information is brand new information to me, and it's just so enthralling. I mean, I think kind of what we need to remember is that like our bodies are, like I said, a sort of well-balanced matrix of very complex, overlapping and dynamic processes, by which I mean they're overlapping in that some of them interact with each other, but also they're just all happening at the same time. And also some things can be used for multiple different jobs, like dopamine and other neurotransmitters can be used for, like you were sort of talking about there, can be used for many different kinds of things in the body. Do you know what I mean? Like, they don't just have this one specific use case. They have many, like, sort of knock-on effects. And, like, as I've said, all the different processes affect each other as well, which means that, like, one being out of alignment can affect others, or can, you know, sort of increase the output of one, or decrease, have all of these different effects. And all you need to change is just that one initial thing, and suddenly all of these systems in the body can go haywire. And so when it comes to pregnancy, the body doesn't just sort of boot up the pregnancy program and let it run. There are so many different little things that need to happen for pregnancy to happen. It's really this like, we think of pregnancy as one thing, but realistically pregnancy is many, many things happening at once to grow a bloody baby inside a person, right? Like, that is, it's insane. There are so many different processes going on during pregnancy, and just a few of, like, you can just pick out a few of those processes and trigger them in slightly different ways, and boom, you've got someone that can believe they're pregnant,
or can
present with symptoms of pregnancy without actually being pregnant. I just think it's incredible how complex and weird and interesting bodies are. Like, it's just very cool to me. And that's the episode for this week.
Hey.
But
with that, I think it's time for the quickfire quiz.
Dun 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 dun. Hysterical pregnancy edition.
Really phoned that one in, didn't you?
Thank you.
So the rules for the quickfire quiz are the same as always. I will ask one question. That's one question between the three of you. The first person to buzz in with the correct answer after I finished asking the question wins. What did he win, Jemp?
Nothing.
You gosh darn right. So, Luke, what is your buzzer?
Ooh.
Jemp, what is your buzzer?
Push!
Noah, what is your buzzer?
Ah!
Very good.
Very good.
How is yours related to pregnancy?
It's me finding out I'm pregnant.
Ah, oh. I see.
Doing the time.
So, the question for you is, what is the technical name for hysterical pregnancy?
Ah, push!
Noah?
Psychosiasis.
What?
Psychosiasis.
What?
Psychosiasis.
No, that's not correct.
Is it,
Champ?
Is it not?
It's not.
Oh, no, it's not.
Champ, I'm throwing to you.
It is.
I've forgotten.
Just a heads up. Noah said psychosiasis.
Psycho pregnancy.
So it's not.
Psychosiasis.
Not psycho. Yes, Luke.
Psychosiasis. No.
Psychosiasis.
Oh. I have said this word. I have said this word.
Pseudo.
Someone's got to buzz
pseudo,
in.
Pseudo-sciences.
I think we'll give it to Noah.
Congratulations, you did it.
Because he's the guest. Well done. Good
I
job.
I helped.
And a point to Jamp
thank
as well.
You, thank you.
And me?
Half a point to Luke.
Yay.
For just being there.
Yay.
Well done. And I think that is it for this week. So, you know, thank you all for being here. Thank you, Noah, for joining us. Is there anything you want to say to the people listening and watching?
Don't get fake pregnant.
Or maybe...
Don't let that...
Sci guys
approved. Don't let that thought...
Maybe your music or
stick
anything?
Stick in your head. Oh! Stream Worms in My Brain by No Offense. And also my other music. If you go on Spotify, type in No Offense and then listen to all my music.
Fantastic. Great. Well, I think that is it for this week. Before we go, we'd like to thank all of our patrons with a very special thank you to executive producer Rosa Rodriguez. And thank you for watching. You can find the full references for this episode down in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Sunday. And why not leave us a nice wee comment? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys. Or you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. Also, that's where we are now. Or over on SciGuys.co.uk. Or send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
Do you want to do it now?
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
Incorrect. SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
You can follow me at NotCar everywhere.
Follow me at Jamkin everywhere.
You can follow me at Luke Cutforth everywhere.
Follow me at NoOffence everywhere, apart from on Twitter where it's NoOffenceAdams and TikTok where it's the NoOffence.
So true.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.